You're tuned to The Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon, I'm Jeff Bossert. This afternoon's guest is Wall Street Journal senior special writer and sports columnist Sam Walker. He's formerly written for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the Christian Science Monitor, where he served as a congressional correspondent and bureau chief in Chicago and Dallas. He's also been a regular guest on networks like ESPN, the BBC, and NPR. Millions of people, including myself, play fantasy baseball. We log on to various websites like Yahoo or ESPN and join one of the many leagues online. Some people meet up and do it. They'll draft a team before the season starts. The premise is the same. You use on-field performance to accumulate points, and players can conduct trades or pick up an unclaimed free agent to boost their roster. Our guest today, Sam Walker, participated in a privately run fantasy league that's altogether different. Welcome, Sam Walker.
Thanks, Jeff. How are you?
Doing pretty well. Explain the Tout Wars, this elite fantasy league that you participated in and was the subject of your book entitled Fantasyland, A Season on Baseball's Lunatic Fringe.
Well, Tout Wars is a strange little universe all unto itself, and I had no idea that it existed for years, but I found this competition, and now what's unique about it is that it's a private rotisserie league. To get in, you have to have some sort of foot in the door in the baseball information business or the rotisserie or fantasy baseball business. A lot of the guys who compete, they have websites, they write books. They basically make a living giving advice to casual players. But there's a lot more to this competition than just that. I mean, these guys are the best players and the biggest names in the industry, but it's also a bit of a breeding ground for actual major league personnel. Seven current or former players from Tout Wars have gone on to serve in major league front offices, as you know, everything from assistant scouting director to special assistant to the general manager to a quantitative analyst. These are mostly jobs that involve the evaluation of ball players, which is what serious rotisserie players do to prepare for their drafts. So it became sort of a little bit of a powerhouse, and I just saw this competition hanging out there, and I thought to myself, wow, I wonder if I could beat these guys by using my access to major league players and clubhouses and my relationships with GMs and all that. I wondered if that would be enough to sort of to beat these guys who are mostly just really brilliant with the numbers.
And this was preparing for this draft was insane. You had to hire a statistician as well as a humanist consultant. Tell me about your staff and what those two guys did.
Well, one of the things I wanted to get to the bottom of, I had never played any kind of fantasy baseball, and I had always been very frightened by it because it seemed like this crazy, obsessive thing that could swallow your life. But what I wanted to do with that season is I wanted to get to the bottom of that question. You know, what's a better way to evaluate human performance or ball players? Is it, you know, can you do it through algorithms and computer models and numbers, or do the scouts, the old grizzled guys with the radar guns and the chewing tobacco, I mean, who've seen hundreds and hundreds of players come and go, does human intuition and gut feelings and all that about people play into it? So what I did was I tried to get myself the most bipolar advisory team I could find. So I found Sig Meidel, who is working for NASA at the time. He's a biomathematician, but a very elite statistician and a PhD candidate in statistics. And I hired him to do the numbers. And he's a big baseball fan, so he knows everything there is to know about advanced, you know, sort of baseball statistical theory. And I brought him on board. And then I found a guy named Nando who was working in a produce warehouse in Syracuse. But he had worked for many years at Sports Ticker, so he'd seen every major league player play, and he had a photographic memory, and he was a fantastic fantasy baseball player, but really knew biographical details about every player and something about their approach at the plate or their pitching or something. So he was my scout, my eyes and ears, and I put these guys together to see. My theory was that if they both agreed on a ball player, then I'd be in great shape. I wanted to find the instances where the numbers and the human scouting agreed, and I figured if I could just pick those players and go with those players, I would have there's no way I could lose.
Now, when you had the draft, you had so much of a budget to work with, and was this imaginary money? Is that correct?
Right.
Like $260, something?
Yes. No, it's in the standard rotisserie leagues, the way that Dan O'Curran and the founders came up with it, imaginary number of $260. Now, in practice, in most leagues, rotisserie leagues, where there's an auction rather than a draft for selecting players, $260 is real money. You'll put that in into the pot, and the winner will get the lion's share of all the 12 or so teams' antes. But in my case, Tout Wars, being the professional competition that it is, there's no prize money and no trophy, no banquet, no nothing. I mean, it's all for bragging rights. So that $260 budget is really just imaginary.
Now, what amazed me is how some of your opponents, or I guess yourself for that matter, were able to do everyday life things prior to your draft and during the season, like, you know, eat and, you know, pay your bills and like, spend time with your family.
Amazing. No, most of the guys, I'd say it's about half and half. I'd say half the people in this competition are full-time professionals where, you know, rotisserie baseball is their livelihood. But then there are others. I mean, my favorite example is Rick Fogle, who's a very accomplished attorney, a bankruptcy trustee in Chicago. You know, and that's an incredibly stressful full-time job, and he manages to run his Tout Wars team around it, and he actually finishes in the top three or four just about every year. He's got an amazing facility for finding value, and it's funny because that's what he does as a bankruptcy trustee. If a company goes under, you know, it's his job to sell off all the assets and satisfy as many creditors as he can, and, you know, that's great training for this game, where really during the season one of the things that you can excel by doing is finding, you know, cheap minor leaguers or people that are coming up who may really produce good numbers for not a lot of money. So he's a good example. There are other people who, you know, yeah, they all seem to maintain, you know, lives and relationships, and they do go to the supermarket and they do all these things, which I was kind of incapable of doing when I was trying to compete with them.
Now, as the season went on, it seemed like you were a victim of bad luck early on. I guess everybody has this, where some guys go in massive slumps. You lost a player, Dimitri Young, on opening day. This was the 2004 season. And what I liked is you started going up to players as the season went on. You needed to make trades, and you were asking a player's advice whether you should trade them. And I think Doug Mankiewicz actually said, yeah, you should go for it.
Yeah, no, it was funny. I at some point, I mean, I sort of planned as I went in that I would talk to the players and get to know the players on my team for many reasons. But Mankiewicz was a great example because I was surprised at how aware they all were of their value of their way they're perceived in the fantasy world. And Mankiewicz was a great example because, you know, I went up to him and I told him, you know, I'd taken him on my team. I was playing in this national experts competition and trying to win. And he just sort of looked at me and laughed, and he said, well, you're an idiot. You know, why would you take me? Because he's very well aware that he doesn't hit home runs, and he's mostly a defensive player, and there's no category for defense in this league. So he's very aware of his value and was urging me to trade him throughout the season. Every time I saw him, he would ask me if I traded him yet, because he was kind of aware that he wasn't the valuable player in this parallel galaxy that he was in real life. But there were a lot of times when I David Ortiz of the Red Sox was another one, and one of my favorite players, and had a wonderful season, and was really probably the best player that I drafted. But I had an incredible agonizing decision during the middle of the season to trade him, and I thought, you know, I should just ask him what he thinks. And I asked him after the All-Star game, actually in Houston, I asked him if I should trade him for Alfonso Soriano, and he just sort of laughed and shrugged and said, well, it's up to you, and, you know, he's a good player, and kind of let me make up my own mind. And of course, you know, I deeply regretted it and watched him go on a hitting rampage. And the next time I saw him in the locker room, he just sort of laughed at me and said, you know, you better get me back. You know, I'm about to get hot. So he had some fun at my expense.
Well, let's fast forward to the end of the season. You wound up eighth, I believe.
Yes.
Yes. But you played again, and I believe you won last year.
Yes.
So how did that happen? Does it tell you that this is all just a roll of the dice year after year?
Well, you know, I had a very hard time with that because, I spent just so much money and so much time trying to win in 2004. And in 2005, and I was back at work and finishing the book, and I really didn't have a lot of time. And you know, what I discovered was that two things. One, that I didn't micromanage my team, and I think I overplayed in 2004. I made too many trades. I made too many rash moves. And I think anyone who does that, you know, whether you do it in real life for a baseball team or whether you're doing it in fantasy, is really flirting with disaster. But what happened really, and I think a lot of it was luck, but at the same time, I had spent so much time studying tout war, studying my league, and getting to know the prejudices and weaknesses of my competitors and figuring out what worked and what strategies worked in my league, that basically I just copied everybody's best ideas and, you know, played to their weaknesses and wound up winning pretty handily, which was mystifying. I mean, I never imagined that it was possible, but we'll see this year if it was an anomaly or if I can do it again.
So you are participating this year?
Yeah, no, I'm back. As
great.
A defending champion and as someone who wrote this book and of course talked at great length about the lives and strategies of all the people in this league, I had a target on my back that was about 10 feet wide. So I have a very strange team. It was basically any you know, sort of iffy players that people didn't mind me having.
So who did you decide you were? Are you the fantasy player who bases more stuff on qualitative analysis, or the guy who, you know, goes up to the player and kind of reads his psyche?
I'd like to think that I learned some lessons and that I use, you know, some of the best quantitative and qualitative information out there. But no, I really think that in the end, I was telling someone the other day, it really comes down to, for me, to really dumb things. I mean, when you're bidding on a player and the player's at $18 and you're thinking about, should I go 19? You know, I mean, the things that rattle around in my head are more like, hey, you know, I saw him playing chess in the clubhouse, or, you know, or his, you know, his little brother's allergic to peanuts or something. I don't know. I mean, these are the thoughts that I have. I still think that in the end of the day, the players that I take on my team, I'm probably more making a determination about what kind of person they are, what I think of them personally, or any sort of, you know, little tidbits about their lives rather than just the hard data.
Well, Sam Walker, best of luck with the Tout Wars this season. Maybe you'll have to do Fantasyland the sequel.
That's right. At some point. Hearing that a lot.
Sam Walker from the Wall Street Journal. He is the author of Fantasyland, a Season on Baseball's Lunatic Fringe. The book is on Viking. So, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it.